Okay, so our course contents for grammar and use. We are going to, in a lot of ways, we're just going to continue where we left off in exploring grammar. So if you took that course, then we're going to pick up with that information and kind of carry it forward. But we're going to describe the structure and use of English. We're going to talk about grammatical forms. And we're going to talk about their meanings and then how they're used in discourse. So we're going to look at, the goals and the purposes of discourse and things that people are trying to get done with discourse, and then match them to grammatical forms that people use when they want to accomplish certain things in discourse, right? A lot of the terminology is going to be familiar to you from your other grammar courses. So our description and our analysis is going to focus on the various levels, right? And the grammatical forms at different levels, right? So we'll think about the lexical units, right? Basically words or lexemes to encompass. Lexeme would include different morphological forms of the same word. We'll talk about syntactic units, right? Phrases, clauses, sentences, right? Your noun phrases, your non-finite clauses, these kinds of things. But we're going to build on that in this course and move into semantic units, right? So propositions, right? And also pragmatic units. So towards the end, we'll start looking at utterances and turn-taking and this kind of stuff, okay? So just a recap of the levels here. So this is something that you saw in exploring grammar, right? You have here your sentence, all the happy students in the department studied linguistics eagerly, right? Call this a simple sentence. There's one clause and it's declarative, right? So linguistics takes this as the kind of quote unquote normal sentence, normal clause, right? Declarative ones. And then the other ones would be your interrogatives and this kind of thing. If we go to the clause level functions, we've got subject, all the happy students in the department. We've got your predicator, studied, right? Then we go to the phrase level. Okay, the subject in this case is a noun phrase. Our predicator is always going to be a verb phrase. It's going to be finite. The direct object is a noun phrase here, right? And then we can break up those phrases into their functions, right? So we've got a head in the noun phrase, right? Students, and we've got pre-modifiers, happy, we've got determiners, all and the, right? So more or less the stuff that you're familiar with. Okay. In our course, a few different aims here. We're trying to complement and deepen your understanding of the English language, right? And morphosyntax. We're trying to help you practice the tools. So the toolbox metaphor, quite apt. So tools that you know already, and then sort of introduce some new tools for analysis, right? We'll try to help you realize why different perspectives on the language and analyzing the language can be used and can be combined to help a linguistic analysis. So syntax is one perspective, semantics is another, pragmatics is another, right? These can work together. These don't have to be like separate islands or whatever metaphor you want to use there. And then we're going to try to develop your understanding of the complexity of language use, right? We'll also improve our analytical skills, and we'll enjoy the exercise of linguistic grammatical analysis. I should maybe so, and we're gonna have fun doing it. Yay, right? Cool. We have some learning outcomes. This stuff is on Moodle, so if you want to go over it, of course it was in the syllabus as well. We're going to, after you're done this course, you want to understand the relationship between form and function, grammatical structures in English. So again, continuing on from exploring grammar, think about the relationship between linguistic form, meaning, and function. And now we're going to bring in more than before. We're going to bring in different text types, right? So text types ranging from, individual words, and think about the relationship between, I'm sorry, let me back up. Think about the relationship between individual words and grammatical constructions to sentences and utterances and units of discourse with different text types. So you'll see different kinds of texts. Whereas in exploring grammar, we mainly focused on standard written English. We'll try to bring in more text types here, right? And this is actually also good because I want you to, this part that says both spoken and written discourse, I want you to keep that in your mind. And I want you to be aware that the theory that we're talking about here, the analysis that we're going to do, you know, may not entirely always work, right? So I want you to have a relationship with the theory and with the way that you're supposed to conduct the analysis, right? Based on the material that I'm giving you, and to see how it works, right? Because for some text types, for some registers of a spoken discourse, our grammatical analysis may not be so good because it's of what it's based on, right? If this is something that interests you, the differences between written and spoken discourse, there's a lot out there and we can talk more about it. We can't devote too much time to it in this course, but it is quite interesting. So just let me know and I will send you a bunch of material to check out or we can talk about it. Then the final one, use a set of tools and methods for analysis in other areas of language study. So as you go off, you know, in doing stuff in sociolinguistics, pragmatics, studying talk or discourse analysis, you'll go off with your toolbox, right? You'll have your toolbox. You'll have more tools in your toolbox, right? And then also, you know, in your working life activities, either in teaching or in other tests of language experts, right? So we take these things to other places. Okay. Moodle, you got the email, I know, because I found out that I made a big typo in it, but sorry for the typo. I know I sent an email. Some of you joined a little bit late, so sorry for the typo, and thanks for joining. You didn't miss much. Moodle is going to have our schedule. It's going to have, well, pretty much everything is going to be conducted on Moodle, so you'll hand in your assignments on Moodle, and all of the material is going to be put on Moodle. I probably won't use the email list much more after this, unless there's something I really have to tell you. There's readings, there's sources, there's other things I try to post on Moodle, stuff related to what we're talking about. If somebody has a question and I end up writing up a document or something about it, I'll post that to Moodle, these kinds of things, right? So that's all going to go on there. Yeah, Moodle quiz. Let's look at how the other groups did, because you're group three. I don't have it in there. I took the slide out. Shucks. Well, I'll tell you this. Don't worry. The other groups did just as good as you did. So everybody did. Everybody remembers their exploring grammar very, very well. And that's nice, right? but we have here today's lesson is on syntax, semantics, and pragmatics. So I think before we jump over there, I just want to take a quick look at the Moodle page. So I'm going to pause the recording right now and go over there. And we're back. Okay, we're going to talk now about syntax, semantics, and pragmatics, right? So let's go on here then. Yep. Okay, so these are related concepts. Yeah, I'm sure you can find semanticists that believe, you know, pragmatics has no place in the semantic analysis. And those people are super fun at parties and you should hang out with them. But in the real world, I mean, semantics and pragmatics, they're kind of like two sides of the same coin, or analyses that use both of these lead to, you know, lead to better results, explain more about language, right? Same thing with syntax. You can't really get on doing analysis of semantics or pragmatics or language without some syntax, right? So think about these as related concepts as working together, right? And what these are, in case you're sort of wondering, okay, yeah, that's fine, Joe, but I don't know what any of these things are, and I don't know how they work together if I don't know what they are. Well, this slide will explain them for you, right? So syntax is going to be your study of the structure of language, the form of words, right? And their arrangement in sentences, right? So when you're thinking about nouns, verbs, right? Subject, objects, complements, these things fall under the cog of syntax, right? These things will go into syntax, right? Sometimes you get the term like morphosyntax, because then that also includes the morphology, so how words change based on their roles in the sentence. So morphosyntax is kind of like a, you know, big 50-cent word for grammar, right? What these three don't actually include is something like phonetics and phonology, right? So that's kind of separate right there, although it is related. But it's not our, we're not really going to talk about that so much in this course. Semantics is going to be the study of meaning, right? And the relationships between elements in language, right? So we're talking about the meanings of words, we're talking about the meaning of sentences, the meaning of utterances, this kind of thing, right? So that's what semantics studies there. And then pragmatics is going to be the study of language in use, right? So this is what, you know, this is like speaker meaning, right? So semantics will study sort of what does this sentence mean? Whereas pragmatics might be like, what did you mean when you used this sentence? Something like that, right? Thinking about discourse, thinking about interaction, right? This kind of stuff. Right. Okay, let's go on here. I think we're actually, let me see what time it is. We can just do this as a group real quick, right? But this is similar to the exercise that we had in exploring grammar. So if you remember in exploring grammar, in the exploring grammar booklet, we talked about how there's certain like slots in a sentence where our parts of speech go, right? So if you remember, sort of adjectives kind of fit in this spot in between a determiner and a noun that they modify. Verbs fit in that spot between the subject and any complements or objects, right? So this is something similar to that. You would know that, okay, I've got an S on the end of this second blank space here. And I know that, well, nouns are something we stick S's on the end of, right? However, third person singular forms of verbs get an S. So maybe that's what goes there. And then before that, we would have a noun, because the is what starts the sentence. So we need to have, you know, well, the goes into noun phrases. And the thing is, like, we could form some kind of structure of this sentence skeleton, right? We've got either a preposition or an infinitive marker here with to, right? So it could be a preposition, meaning, you know, in the direction of something like that, or it could be an infinitive marker, because the infinitive marker, infinitives in English are, you know, to plus the base form of the verb, right? So if we formed an English clause using the skeleton here, filling it in, we could fill it in with nonsense words, right? We could have something like the dump truck conspires to dance the Macarena, right? That it's not necessarily meaningless. We can kind of wrap our brains around it. But it's not something that we would think about making sense, right? If we use actual English words in the same skeleton to form an acceptable clause, right? We might have, we could certainly do something that looks like the dump truck conspires to dance the Macarena, right? What did we have? Did anyone recognize what yesterday was? Or the significance, oh, I have to spell significance on the chat, significance of the date? Does anybody notice? Yeah, the Ides of March. So we could have a sentence, the Ides of March referring to the date that Julius Caesar was assassinated, right? So we could have something like, you know, the senator conspires to kill the emperor. And then this makes total sense, right? This is something that could be in a story about Julius Caesar, right? So if you know the story of Julius Caesar, or if you read this Shakespeare about Julius, I'm sorry, we have grammar class and I started off with metaphors and now I'm talking about Shakespeare. I don't know how this happened. But if you've read the Shakespeare play, Julius Caesar, he's warned of the Ides of March, right? Which is March 15th. And that was yesterday. And that was the day that Caesar was assassinated, right? By a conspiracy of, I'm pretty sure they were called senators. But they could have been something else. This is not going to turn into Roman history class. We're going to keep it in as grammar class. We could also take a group of words and start putting them in order, right? You could, you know, take a group like have sort of a set of lexical items like we have here with help, away, dog, cat, easy, like, child, under, seam, plant, rat, you know? And we could put those in together in order to form sentences, right? Think about it in this way. If we're presented with these words, we can explain these. We know what these words mean, right? If I ask you something like, you know, what does cat mean? Well, you would use it like, well, you know, a cat is a four-legged animal that is very popular on the internet, right? Something like that. Dog, something a similar type thing. Easy, like, child, under. We can all explain all of these. So we know what they mean in isolation. We say, you know, the lexical items can be used to form sentences. We know that that we also know about them, about their use and their structural properties, right? So if we were to put them into a certain order, we would know what we have to do with them, right? We know that help is a, could be a verb here for us. So we might have to conjugate it, right? Similar thing with like, could be a verb here. We'd have to conjugate that. If we have more than one cat or dog or rat or plant or something like that, we could form these sentences. We could also form ones that don't seem to work, right? The under rats to dog the like. This doesn't work for us. This is ungrammatical for us, right? Starts off okay, even though I don't know what under rats are, but the under rats, well, to dog, no, because that would make dog a verb, and then you have an infinitive. You don't have a finite verb there, which we need, right? So these kinds of things. If the first one, the under rats to dog the like, worked based on or didn't work because of the syntax, right? We explained it away because, hey, the syntax doesn't work here. We don't have a finite verb there acting as the predicator. If we changed it around and we had something like the dog likes to plant a cat, now we do have a finite verb. So this one works syntactically, right? There's nothing grammatically wrong with this one, but it doesn't really work semantically or pragmatically, right? We have to, the dog likes to plant a cat has the structure of an English clause, but there's still something really wrong with it, right? I'll put it in the chat here. Animals and plants, or animals can't be planted, sort of. Also, animals can't usually do the planting, right? Your dog's not going to plant your flower garden, right? My dog's certainly not going to plant my flower garden. I don't have to get off the couch for that. So semantically, this one kind of falls apart like that, right? Okay, let's do an exercise here. I'll pause it. Let's pause the recording here. Okay, so we want to think about the intertwined levels of linguistic analysis. So we talked about semantics, pragmatics, syntax being kind of those gears that we're working together. There's also different levels of linguistic analysis that can work together, right? So our forms that are available for expressing meaning, also our grammatical distinctions and information that these forms convey. So this is gonna come up when we look at, you know, when we're trying to get some kind of information across, we tend to put it in a certain form. We tend to package it in a certain way. We tend to use a certain grammatical formation for that information, right? So meanings that, or certain forms express certain meanings, right? And some of this stuff I think will come, you know, as we analyze it, you'll say, okay, this is, it'll be new because you haven't done it before, but at the same time, it'll also be old because you'll intuitively be familiar with packaging information in a certain way so that it comes across a certain way and that it means a certain thing. I know I'm speaking really abstractly right here, but when you get examples, things will be made clear. So yeah, talking about what the way that we actually use language to create meaning in different contexts, right? If we think about our different approaches to grammar, we have traditional and structural grammar has, you know, these where our concepts come from. But a functional grammar is going to focus on the functions and their meanings, right? So we're going to take that approach here. Some other metaphors for language here, a means of making sense of the world, a resource for expressing ourselves. So we had these as well, communicating interstates, a vehicle for social interaction, living, changing, emergent phenomenon that adapts to users' needs, right? If we compare language right now to the 70s and 80s, right? Right now we have social media in our lives, which if you believe certain people is ruining the language or is, I don't know, corrupting the language or something like that, it's not. You could make the argument you could prove the argument that people today are much more lingual than they were in the 70s and 80s, just by how many different media people are using language on. So interacting with language and also creating language on different media, right? People are today are sort of hyperlingual in the sense that they can use language in many different registers and media. And another thing with social media is, you know, it allows the spread of slang terms or the spread of different language terms to accelerate, basically. Now, their spread accelerates, but also it seems to be that their death is accelerated just as much, right? So whereas, you know, things might pop up very quickly and then spread very quickly on social media, they immediately become passe on social media. So they're just as quick to go down. Not all of them do, but some of them do. If we take, you know, a single word analysis, we can have multiple perspectives on just a single word, right? We need access to different types of knowledge, right? We need to think about a word's phonological and morphological form. We need to think about its abstract meaning. This would be the semantic meaning, its sense, right? So something if we went and looked it up in the dictionary. And then we need to think about its relationship to other words in the language. So this would, this also falls under the rubric of semantics. And some dictionaries will give you this kind of information, sort of where it's used and how it's used. Then the ways in which this word is combined with other words in a sentence and utterances and grammatical constraints and usage constraints and, you know, to make idiomatic constructions in language, right? We can think about the context in which it's generally used, sort of what we can call the co-text, the discourse domain, social events, environments in which it occurs. I was thinking about in a class I just had, we had the word heckin. We talked about heckin gets used exclusively. Oops, hold on. I got to spell things right. Exclusively on social media. No spelling here, right? Think about things like heckin' good time. I don't know, something like that. Maybe then it drifts off into spoken language and then you hear it certain places. You might hear it on, well, you could hear it anywhere with spoken language, right? Other terms, maybe, you know, formal terms that get used exclusively in written language or in certain registers of spoken language. Then there's background knowledge of a word. There's knowledge about the speaker and the hearer, right? There's knowledge about what the word being used by a certain person means, right? And of course, we all share some world knowledge, right? So there's things like that. Okay. Let's though talk about the focus for this course. Okay. So we're going to talk about form, meaning, and function. Again, similar to exploring grammar. So we're going to go with form, meaning, and function. And the focus of the various levels is in bold here, right? So we're somewhat going to leave words and lexemes to the side, although those will come up, especially when we talk about meaning and senses and stuff like that. But instead, we're going to keep our focus on phrase structure, noun phrases, verb phrases, these kinds of things, what Downing and Locke call nominal groups, verbal groups. Phrases as elements of the structure and clauses, right? And we're going to look then at clauses and sentences, utterances and linguistic acts, and then texts and discourse. So these are some higher level of analysis that we didn't really look at in exploring grammar, right? We kind of stopped at the level of clauses and sentences in exploring grammar. Now we'll take it up one more level there, okay? We're going to level up our analysis. Keep in mind there's different terms for the same thing. So this is what I said earlier. Structural grammar is going to use something like noun phrase, verb phrase, functional grammar, aka Downing and Locke, or just Downing. Third edition is just Downing. Uses nominal group, verbal group, right? These are the same things, right? Structural grammar, your Longman, for example, is going to talk about adverbials. And functional grammars will sometimes use adjunct, right? Talking about some supplemental information, okay? Cool. So, homework. Let's talk about it. Pages 33 to 40 from the theory booklet. Actually, it's just the booklet now. And then these modules should be the same in whichever version of Downing and Locke you have. But I can actually jump over there real quick and show you what's going on here. So hold on one second. Let me pause the recording.